The September 20th, 2013 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is reconvened into open session. The next item on the agenda is the President's Report.
I just want to interrupt you 1 second, Mr. President. I'm sorry. We just, for the record, the board took no action in executive session, which requires a vote in open session.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. You know, if summers are supposed to be slow at a college campus, someone forgot to tell CSU we had a busy summer here at CSU. I very much feel that our activity over the past few months truly reflects how our university has become an important cultural focal point in Chicago. It seems that every day this summer, we were hosting Mayor Emanuel, Governor Quinn, Congressman Rush, Congressman Kelly, Congressman Davis, Senator Davis, Senator, state representatives, aldermen, community leaders, professional athletes, and major national speakers, on and on and on. We hosted a Congressional Black Caucus Summit on Urban Solutions, a concept that we came up with in terms of urban solutions, which garnered national attention. Senator Mark Kirk spent quite a bit of time with us over the last month, and we welcome 1,500 a week every Wednesday for Jazz in the Grass. And that is an average. Some of our Jazz in the Grass events went up to 2,500 individuals. Summer camps in STEM and mathematics served close to 1,000 students. Our faculty and our science areas did an absolutely outstanding job. We are having an impact on the Chicago community that is just really, you know, is changing the landscape of what's going to happen with future young men who want to go into math, chemistry, physics, biology, and et cetera. We recently officially kicked off our fall 2013 fall semester convocation ceremony with faculty, civil service, and staff. It was a convocation, and I was pleased to have the chance to address all the new faculty and returning faculty. I was able to provide the new members of the CSU family with some history on where we were, where we are, and where we are going as a university. There was a noticeable energy in the room, and I left very excited about the path we are on. Before I go any further, and I will come back and finish my comments, I want to ask Dr. Rowan to come up and make some comments with regards to a very important point that we're dealing with, and that is shared governance. Dr. Rowan.
Thank you very much, President Watson, Chairman Young, trustees, colleagues, and friends. Last December, I visited the board to share with you an initiative to encourage the development of a university framework on shared governance. Many other universities have chosen to invest the time to develop a framework as a way of organizing and acculturating further all members of our community, their communities, such as like CSU, to quality improvements and as a means of gathering the extant processes and practices of governance that already exist. For the first 6 months of the year, a team of faculty, staff, students, and administrators developed and piloted a survey. That survey has been launched as of 2 weeks ago, and there's still plenty of time to take it. So I have distributed, if you don't already have the link to the survey. We want everyone here and everyone who is not here, all the members of the community, to take the survey. The data will provide us with a basis for moving forward with the next steps, meetings of varied campus bodies to discuss governance further, visits by off-campus speakers to motivate our efforts, and the formulation of a drafting committee that is diverse and representative. We anticipate that these efforts will gather momentum during the academic year. I appreciate very much the chance to share this with you, and thank you for your support of the work.
Thank you very much, Dr. Rowan. Now that our 10-year accreditation is secured, we still have a great deal of work to do in the post-accreditation process. Accreditation steering committees and subcommittees are already meeting to advance the process of assembling necessary follow-up reports. We continue to implement program measurement and effectiveness, PME plans, which is part of our strategic plan to ensure that our core mission of academic excellence, community service, cost efficiencies, enrollment and retention, strengthened infrastructure, and shared accountability become a reality. Enrollment, we anticipate a drop in overall enrollment, which was stated. This is consistent with national trend. NBC just recently reported that enrollment was down nationally by more than 500,000 students last year. By way of comparison, we expect to see a smaller percentage decrease than some other Illinois public universities. I would also like to note, after reading some stories in the news this week, that CSU is proud to say that more than 90% of our students are Illinois residents. We are an Illinois university that serves Illinois first. We just had about 20 plus students come to us from India for our graduate program and a CIS. Is that correct, Dean?
27.
We also, of our 120 plus student athletes, about 10% of our athletes come to us from other countries. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So, you know, we are reaching out beyond not just the city of Chicago, not just to the southwestern suburbs, but we're reaching out to other countries, which is what we should and must do to ensure a diverse student base. Infrastructure improvements. Prasant earlier addressed the new internet servers, creating faster internet speed campus-wide. We placed over 500 computers. We installed 500 new computers, new Mac computer lab and CMAT, and we hired approximately 9 to 12 new tenure track faculty. And we opened up the 95th Street bus turnaround. Academic grants, our faculty have this year, we are going to see an upsurge in the amount of grants that we receive. Our faculty have been working very hard. And I think you had heard about the $2 million over 5 years for the College of Pharmacy, United States Agency for International Development textbook grant, where we're having an impact on Ghana. Our National Science Foundation of $980,000. And we're doing so much in the STEM. You know, I would like for us at maybe our December meeting or soon after is to make a presentation to the board, a very comprehensive presentation by Dr. Jones as to what we're doing with STEM, because we are really putting a mark on the map throughout the nation as far as it goes for what we're doing with STEM and our faculty. Moving forward, we continue to build relationships with faculty, civil service, and our students. Continued efforts strengthening retention. It's not enough just to recruit students. We must retain them, and Trustee Curtin and Trustee Smith made some excellent points there. Implementation of our strategic plan is a reality, and we must focus on that. With that, the only other thing I would like to report out on is that we're looking at a concept called US. You heard me mention it very briefly. US is Urban Solutions. It is pretty much developed out of some interaction with a number of faculty for the last year, and it came to a head with the congressional conference that we had here. And we're going to be establishing an institute, and it's going to be faculty-driven. And we're also looking at another institute dealing with leadership and policy development. And once again, that will be faculty-driven also. We're working with the faculty, talking with them about it, and getting, you know, just an overwhelming amount of response in terms of involvement. With that, Mr. Chairman and trustees, thank you.
Any questions for the president? Next on the agenda will be the report from the Faculty Senate. Dr. Bentley?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Philip Beverly, President of the Faculty Senate.
Good afternoon.
I believe you received the Senate report in your board materials for the period since the May 2013 report. If you have any questions about the contents of that report, I'm open to answering those at the end of my remarks. I was curious about the report given by my distinguished colleague, Dr. Bernie Roan, about university activity around shared governance. Given that the UPI and the Faculty Senate have been active in representing faculty interests for at least four decades, members of my body are concerned that activities on the part of the administration constitute concealment of a more serious issue that has not been addressed during this administration. There's a very robust body of academic literature on shared governance, the principles of which appear to be applied at other institutions with some facility and not yet understood, much less practiced here. Before I speak to the most pressing faculty concerns, I'm compelled to address some issues around the role of the Faculty Senate in the academic enterprise of the institution. Current efforts to denigrate and besmirch the functioning of the Senate have caused much consternation with the faculty. For an administration that has so profoundly failed in its performance to now try to disband the Faculty Senate on a potentially minor administrative oversight is lamentable. The Faculty Senate vigorously rejects this thinly veiled attempt by the administration to silence any intellectual critique of its performance. I can, of course, empathize with any president stung by a faculty no confidence vote, but to retaliate in such a crass, disputatious manner is unbecoming. Let me convey the specifics of this assertion to provide you some context. During 2011, two of the university's colleges were arbitrarily reorganized. This reorganization, which was unilaterally imposed on the faculty in several departments, caused a great deal of confusion and mistrust, neither of which have been ameliorated to this day. The Faculty Senate decided, consistent with its decades-long practices, including the use of Robert's Rules of Order, to suspend the rules regarding membership to ensure the integrity of the body. We sought balanced and stable representation for the body of faculty and to protect it no matter what thoughtless or ill-conceived administrative reorganizations might occur. The Faculty Senate was clear at the time that this response was less than optimal and necessary to counter such actions by an administration that clearly did not and does not understand the academic enterprise of a doctoral degree-granting institution. During the spring of 2012, the Senate revised its constitution and bylaws after a lengthy deliberative process. The revised bylaws that had only minor revisions went into effect in fall 2012. There appears to be an assertion by the administration that the Constitution and bylaws need to be submitted to the President for approval and to the Board for review. The Faculty Senate rejects this assertion as there were only minor revisions, less than 20% of the document. The Senate contends that if every document that undergoes minor revisions needs to be sent to the President, it would leave precious little time for performance of presidential duties like fundraising, increasing enrollment, and reducing audit findings. One thing that must be made clear at this point is that I was not the presiding officer of the Faculty Senate at the time of these actions. I am the presiding officer now. As the leader, I appear before you to take full responsibility for the body's actions 2 years ago. Leaders never shirk their responsibilities with excuses. They stand up and say, "I am responsible." With that said, I would humbly request your counsel as to whether you wish the Faculty Senate to submit those documents to the President for approval and to you for review. Given the lengthy turnaround times for any response from the administration on what we have submitted, it would be helpful for our body to hear from you what you wish us to do. Faculty, of course, do not want the board involved in the minutiae of the university unless the board believes it needs to be. My members wanted me to communicate the facts of this situation so that you would have a balanced narrative on which to base any decision you might make. Should you need me to submit this request in writing, I have a memorandum for your consideration. I can give it to you at the end of my remarks. Faculty across the university are deeply disturbed by a pattern that is formed around faculty hiring. I would direct your attention to the joint statement on government of colleges and universities agreed to by American Council on Education, American Association of University Professors, and Association of Governing Boards. As the devil is in the details, the faculty sought to clarify the critical elements of these fundamental principles. For example, in April of this year, the Faculty Senate, at the administration's request, submitted a faculty hiring policy consistent with industry standard practices. To date, the Senate has heard nothing further on this submission, and faculty hiring practices have continued to be problematic. The hiring irregularities identified by the Senate in the past 2 years contribute to negative public perception, lead to the potential compromise of the integrity of academic programs, and diminish an already negligible faculty morale. All of those things inevitably impact our students negatively. A second serious faculty concern is the continuing decline in enrollment and the apparent absence of any substantive plan to correct this condition. That the university continues to struggle with an issue first identified by the Higher Learning Commission in 2003 shows a clear failure of will on the part of multiple administrations to remedy enrollment management deficiencies. Given that this is at least a decade-old problem, begs the question of the role of the board in unknowingly perpetuating this condition. Has the board provided adequate oversight, given the appointment of senior administrators who've lacked significant enrollment management experience? Did the board hold accountable those same administrators on whose watch enrollment declined? Third area of concern is the number of interim positions currently occupied as a result of failed search processes. Since 2009, faculty have been acutely aware of flawed processes leading to flawed outcomes. It is professionally deleterious for the dean of the university's largest college to be entering his third year as an interim after two failed searches. The Senate has requested that this body act to eliminate the unnecessary use of interim appointments, yet unfortunately, we've not received any response to this request. I would hope the board understands the consequences of its inattention to the operation of an administratively troubled university. And I say troubled by way of this example. The Board of Trustees regulations state on page 7 that an organization chart of the administrative structure shall be prepared for the university before the beginning of each academic year. No such document has been distributed to the university community as we enter the fifth week of the semester. The administration's inability to comply with the most basic board regulations is indicative of systemic failure that cannot be ameliorated by administrative speak. Much like Orwellian newspeak, administrative declarations are false and should be recognized as demonstrably false by this body. The Senate, in an attempt to assist the administration, submitted more than a year ago streamlined organization charts for the entire university with no acknowledgement of their submission or discussion about their implementation. A consistent theme emerged from the aforementioned concerns that I would note here. There appears to be no coherent policymaking process at this university. There is an early attempt at a policy review committee, but there's no comprehensible policymaking process. Given the numerous references in your governance documents for the president to make policy, it's unfortunate that no one can provide a simple policy statement or process flow diagram for making policy. It is therefore understandable how the most fundamental tasks either go uncompleted or unaddressed. And micromanagement under the guise of being responsible for everything has proven to be counterproductive and ultimately unhealthy for the university. For board members who have served less than a year, I invite you to dialogue with those who hold the corporate memory of the institution, its faculty, particularly its tenured faculty. Administrators come and go. Faculty remain to suffer through derailed presidencies and watch powerless as strategic plans are written and rewritten, much of the corporate knowledge is dismissed, and suspect administrative appointments are made. I encourage you to acquaint yourself with how academic institutions function. This is not a business. It is not a nonprofit community center. It is a public university which, at the end of the day, should act in the best interest of the citizens of the state of Illinois, not just those who occasionally show up to intimidate and silence voices of dissent during public comment at board meetings. Thank you for your attention. Answer your questions.
Thank you. You now open up the microphone for public comment. I will remind the public that we don't entertain presentations on university negotiations, the collective bargaining process, or the activities, lifestyles, or beliefs of individual employees. We also don't engage in dialogue, so we don't answer questions. We just listen to your concerns. Microphone is now open.
My name is Dan Knight, and I'm a student here at Chicago State University. And I can appreciate us having this meeting, and I just want to commend everybody that's involved for being involved.
My name is Bob Yonis. I'm an associate professor of history. And given the decision that you just made regarding the contract of President Watson, I want to give you some sense of what it is that you have endorsed. I'd like to share some data with the board. The figures I'm about to cite are available from a number of public sources. First, Chicago State's enrollment has decreased 21% the last 3 years. A drop of 1,549 students from 7,362 in 2010 to 5,813 this year. This drop virtually mirrors the 22.3% drop in enrollment experienced by the City Colleges of Chicago during Wayne Watson's chancellorship. An examination of 13 years of enrollment data reveals that enrollment at either City Colleges or Chicago State increased only twice. By 83 students at the City Colleges in 2008-09, or 872 one-millionth of 1%, and 127 students at Chicago State in 2009-10, an increase of 1.7%. While it is true that enrollment is down in Illinois public universities, the overall three-year enrollment decline is a modest 4.9%. Of the four-year public state universities in Illinois, Chicago State's enrollment performance is the worst. Second, Chicago State continues to have dismal audit numbers. The most recent audit uncovered 29 exceptions, which, when added to previous audit exceptions of 34 and 41, bring the school's total to 104 in the past 3 years. Again, this is the worst performance in the entire state university system. Second is the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, with 90 total findings in 3 years, or 84% of Chicago State's exceptions. Notably, UIUC has roughly seven times the enrollment of Chicago State. In fact, the number of audit exceptions generated by Chicago State last year exceeded the total number generated by UIUC and the University of Illinois Chicago combined. Those two schools have a combined enrollment of better than 70,000. Third, the income of the CSU Foundation has dropped 46% in 3 years, while contributions to the foundation have decreased by an estimated 33%. Fourth, the relationship between Wayne Watson and the faculty, as described by Philip Beverly, continues to deteriorate, and Chicago State continues to be the subject of far too many negative press reports. I believe your decision demonstrated your commitment to fiscal accountability and responsibility, to protecting the interests of the taxpayers of Illinois, and to the welfare of the students, staff, faculty, and administrators of Chicago State. However, another 2 years of an administrative performance like the one we've witnessed in 2009, and the school may simply cease to exist. Thank you for your time.
My name is Ann Kuzdale, and I'm also a history professor. I teach medieval history, and it's very interesting. Sometimes people ask me, why did you get into studying medieval history? This is pre-modern Europe. And they said, did you want to live in the Middle Ages? And I, you know, wear the nice dresses and the hats and all. And I always say, no, but I'm living in the Middle Ages now. I didn't realize how Chicago was run very much like an old-fashioned, I'd say pre-modern, medieval state with warlords in charge of various districts, with kings and queens being fashioned and unfashioned at the whim, and then, of course, the role of the church. At any rate, I'm concerned about the fact that I believe Chicago State has violated the terms of its recent accreditation. If you're not familiar with the document, you might think about looking at the HLC accreditation issues. A violation of the Higher Learning Commission core components, 1D, that the institution's mission demonstrates commitment to the public good, actions and decisions reflect an understanding that in its educational role, the institution serves the public, not solely the institution, and thus entails a public obligation. The institution's educational responsibilities take primacy over other purposes, such as generating financial returns for investors, contributing to a related or parent organization, or supporting external interests. On March 21st, 2013, Governor Patrick Quinn removed three board members of the Chicago State University who were in the midst of an investigation of President Wayne Watson. This action was well documented in the press and showed Governor Quinn's partiality to the president and his chief supporter, Illinois Senate President Emil Jones, and Sixth Ward Alderman Roderick Sawyer, Reverend Jesse Jackson, and the external interests of the Illinois and Chicago politicians seemed to take primacy over the institution's educational responsibilities. Violation of core component 2C. The governing board of the institution is sufficiently autonomous to make decisions in the best interest of the institution and to assure its integrity. 2C.3. The governing board preserves its independence from undue influence on the part of donors, elected officials, ownership interests, or other external parties when such influence would not be in the best interest of the institution. I submit that the Chicago State University no longer has an independent board of trustees governing the university due to the actions of Governor Quinn and ex-Illinois State Senate President Emil Jones, as well as the politicians of the state of Illinois and local city aldermen. Their interference in university governance in February and March of 2013 indicate that there is direct outside pressure on the CSU Board of Trustees and it cannot act independently. Last March, Dr. Watson defied the Chicago State Board of Trustees and refused to acknowledge the board's right to dismiss the president of the university. Dr. Watson announced that he would not abide by the board's determination, and his spokesmen and supporters said that it was up to the governor, not the board. Ex-Illinois State Senate President Emil Jones's guest commentary derided members of the Board of Trustees and called on Governor Quinn to remove them. I am calling on Governor Quinn and the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus to address the impropriety displayed by these three shameless board members. This was quoted in the Chicago Sun-Times. Also, ex-Illinois State Senate President Emil Jones implied that his $200,000 donation to the university is tied to whether or not Dr. Watson remained as president. In December 2012, Mr. Emil Jones donated $200,000 to the university for scholarships. After March 1st, when the board tried to change the leadership of Chicago State University, Mr. Jones is quoted as saying, "You, the Board of Trustees, make me want to say, hey, I want that money back. I'm going to give it someplace else." This was quoted on WLS Channel 7. Lastly, violation 5.B. The institution's governance and administrative structures promote effective leadership and support collaborative processes that enable the institution to fulfill its mission. The institution has and employs policies and procedures to engage its internal constituencies, including its governing board, administration, faculty, staff, and students in the institution's governance. 5B.2, the governing board is knowledgeable about the institution. It provides oversight for the institution's financial and academic policies and practices and meets its legal and fiduciary responsibilities. Governor Quinn's appointees, are many connected to each other and to Dr. Watson. I don't believe this Board of Trustees can act as an independent overseer of the university. I would hope that you would consider disbanding yourself and requesting Governor Quinn to put a board in that can actually see the university through the next couple of years. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Pancho McFarland, Associate Professor of Sociology at Chicago State. I've been here, this will be my ninth year. I'm also the chairperson of the Shared Governance Committee of the Faculty Senate. And the Shared Governance Committee of the Faculty Senate has been investigating shared governance issues and been making suggestions about shared governance for some time now. But the reason why I wanted to speak was because Wayne and I agree on something. And that's unusual. And that is the importance of STEM and what has been going on here at Chicago State with the summer programs you suggested and some of the other things that are going on at the science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So, but my question is then, if STEM is so strong and doing so well, and in part, and in major part because of its faculty, why were biology and chemistry not allowed to hire somebody at tenure track this year? And this goes to speak to one of the major problems that we've seen here at Chicago State, and that is failed faculty searches, searches for administrators that are failed, non-searches that go on. There's a very curious process around, to say the least, around searches here, and we're very concerned. I'll just give you an example, and this is also a personal example because I spent probably 100 hours searching for faculty in our department as the chair of our search committee, only to be told that that the people we suggested were not adequate to the job. So we spent over 150 hours between the four of us, thousands of dollars of university money for nothing. And this is just as one example, and I could go on and on about this, but it's one example of the way in which this micromanaging that is going on and this lack of shared governance at our university is causing us problems. Now, we did this in sociology, but I have since heard from many other people that of the 39 tenure-track lines that were available for hire this year, only 13 were hired, one-third. Again, that means thousands of dollars wasted, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, thousands of man-hours and labor power wasted at the whim of, as far as I understand, at the whim of Wayne. He decided we didn't need these folks. Many of them excellent, bringing money to the university, bringing prestige to the university, and especially in STEM. I don't want to point them out too much. I don't want them to be retaliated against. But I'm not speaking for them. I'm just speaking, again, as myself, as a citizen of the state of Illinois and as a member of this community for 9 years. And it's a shame that the people who know most about curriculum, the people who know most about the disciplines, have the least say in who gets hired. And I would put it to you to examine this and understand, again, as was stated earlier, that this is not a business in which decisions are made from the top down. In fact, the best decisions at the university are made in a lateral manner with true shared governance. And if we're talking about faculty hiring or if we're talking about curriculum, that is the purview of the faculty, and leaders who want success will listen to the faculty on those issues. Thank you.
Any other comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Curtin? Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Lake?
Yes.
Trustee Smith? Trustee Young?
Yes. You're hereby adjourned.